Hi, this is Stephanie Kramer, and you are listening to TV Confidential.
Ed Robertson, welcome you back to TV Confidential, a radio talk show about television that makes you want to party like it's 1999. Michelle Danner will be joining us at the top of the hour. Michelle is the artistic director of the Edgemar Center of the Arts in Santa Monica. She also recently directed the film version of John Buffalo Mailer's Hello, Herman, a film about a teenager who carries out a Columbine-like shooting that also takes a hard look at today's society. We hope you'll join us for that. In the meantime, speaking of Prince, Prince celebrated his birthday earlier this month, and with that in mind, we thought we'd spend a few minutes talking about the life and career of a man who in many ways helped define MTV, music television, while also cutting his own singular path to the heart of popular music for more than 30 years. Joining us now is author Jason Draper, reviews editor of Record Collector Magazine, and a regular contributor to New Musical Express, Uncut, Metal Hammer, and Dance Today. Jason's latest book is Prince, Chaos, Disorder, and Revolution. Prince, Chaos, Disorder, and Revolution, an authoritative chronicle of one of music's true mavericks. We'll tell you where you can order Prince, Chaos, Disorder, and Revolution in just a second. But first, we began our conversation by asking Jason about the often symbiotic relationship between Prince and MTV.
Well, sure. They came out at the same sort of time, you know, and sort of the one, it's almost like one held the hand of the other, and, you know, quite mutually as they sort of rose to fame together, you know. The 80s really was sort of, you get the MTV generation. And, you know, when Prince started to get a heavy rotation on that, it really upped his career as well.
Absolutely. I mean, because and it certainly helped, I mean, you know, certainly from a programming point of view, it certainly helped that he was provocative because, you know, I mean, especially since he was coming, I mean, he was first starting, you know, around the time when MTV was just getting its footing, and so anything that would attract eyeballs to this new video channel had to be a good thing.
Absolutely. And also, let's not forget that you're talking about a black R&B artist as well, which is sort of, you know, that's double for your money, really. Someone like Prince and Michael Jackson at the same time. You know, I think Jack had Beat It, Prince's first on there, with his first song on there was Little Red Corvette, and mm-hmm. sort of this sort of thing, and this sort of worldwide exposure for these two guys, you know, was monumental on many levels.
It's easy to say that, you know, Prince pushed the envelope, but I think one of the quotes you have in the book is that, I think this comes from Prince himself saying he pushed the envelope off the table. Of course, and that's certainly true, but he was always like that from the very beginning.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, if you look at even earlier, before any of his videos was got onto MTV, around the Dirty Mind period, there's also somewhere else in the book where his manager has told him Prince was wearing spandex live on stage without any underwear in his hand. You can't do that. You need to wear the underwear. So Prince, of course, goes the other way, and he wears the underwear without the spandex, and he wore this trench coat and this dirty moustache and this neckerchief and high heels. It's quite an odd look. It's very, as you say, very provocative. And I mean, that is absolutely going to translate onto MTV. And I think if you talk about Prince pushing the envelope off the table, one of his very earliest videos from the 1999 album, so the same album with Little Red Corvette, is for a song called Automatic. And, you know, that's pretty sadomasochistic video. It's quite extreme.
If you had to describe Prince in one word, Jason, what would it be?
You can't do that. That's impossible.
Okay.
It's like trying to stop the rain.
That's true. But I mean, certainly a number, you know, just going through your book, Prince, Chaos, Disorder, and Revolution, certainly several words pop into mind, one of which is, well, certainly artist. Another is kind of mercurial in that, and I think that kind of stems from the fact that, you know, he seemed to be born with this innate talent and this genius for music. And, you know, one thing you can certainly say about Prince is that he had the courage of his convictions, and he refused to be defined by anybody.
Absolutely. And I mean, that has been, you know, one of the main, for someone who has changed his mind a lot of times, and has, you know, certainly changed his sound and his image, and he's sort of is completely revolutionizing everything about himself. That is really one of the few sort of constants in his entire life, I think. And that goes back to when he was, you know, signing to Warner Brothers, and they weren't sure whether to let him produce his own album. He was adamant that he would, and he won that battle. And then, of course, 1999, he's adamant that it comes out as a double album, and he won that battle again. And, you know, recently he's been releasing albums over in the UK for free through newspapers and things like that. And so that's another battle, not with the record label, but over here there was a big hoo-ha with the stockists and people, record stores saying, well, if he's not going to help us out, we're not going to stock his records, you know, that sort of thing. So he's always been looking, you could say he's always been looking for fights, but it may be a more polite way to put it, but he's always been looking to sort of keep everything under his own control.
Well, that's true. I mean, and I think one of the, I mean, certainly... You go back to, you know, his relationship with Warner Records, which is, you know, I mean, I guess tumultuous is one way to describe it. I mean, on the one hand, he was delivering product that, I mean, certainly in the case of Purple Rain, which is still his most successful album. I mean, he was making money for the record company, but at the same time, he refused to do things. I mean, he refused to do things the way a conventional artist would do, which would drive him mad if you're a record company executive. But if you're an artist, you should be true to yourself, shouldn't you?
Absolutely, absolutely. And, you know, I mean, one of the greats, you talk about Purple, we mentioned Purple Rain, and then the follow-up Around the World in the Day. So you talk about Prince doing it his own way. He refused initially, but he changed his mind later, but he initially refused to release a single and to release a promo video for it, and everything like that. And also, as he said himself, you know, how easy would it have been to follow up Purple Rain with an album that starts with the backwards version of the solo to Let's Go Crazy?
Right.
Why would you want to do that? Like he said himself, you want to line all your records up side by side and not get bored. So, of course, it drove Warner Brothers quite crazy. How do you catch up with that? How do you keep up that sort of thing? But for Prince, you know, he is an artist, and his tour manager, Alan Needs, has a quote in the book where he says, his past music is like yesterday's news, and Prince's opinion is, well, why would you read, you know, old newspapers?
Right. Well, and another word that pops into my head in talking about Prince, Jason, would be savvy, because as you say, initially, and you know, Purple, Around the World in a Day is just one example, but there are other instances where, on general principle, he didn't want to do the promotional vehicles and the sort of things that you would do in order to promote an album. But at some point, he would compromise a little bit and do some sort of promotional vehicle, because that would, you know, not so much to appease the record company, but, you know, I would say he did it for himself.
Yeah. And I mean, savvy is absolutely the word, and especially if you look at the latter part of his career, he has become an absolute master of playing the game. Whenever he's got something new, a new album to promote, it's always bolted onto something else, and he always does, you know, at least one major TV appearance. So around the 31-21 album, he did the Brits in the UK, and that was shortly after doing the Super Bowl show in America. And, you know, he released Planet Earth over in the UK through a newspaper at the same time as doing his 20, you know, it was a record-breaking 21 Nights in London stand. And when you start to get that point, savvy is absolutely the word, because the new album is almost sort of playing second fiddle to Prince just turning up.
Right.
Every time Prince turns up, that's the event, and you're more interested in the event than you are about anything else, you know?
We are talking to Jason Draper, reviews editor of Record Collector Magazine and the author of Prince, Chaos, Disorder, and Revolution. Prince, Chaos, Disorder, and Revolution, an authoritative chronicle of the life and career of the artist formerly and currently known as Prince. Packed with information on every album, every movie, and every tour of Prince, as well as profiles of key collaborators and a detailed assessment of Prince's various business dealings and his many, many side projects. The publisher of Prince, Chaos, Disorder, and Revolution is Backbeat Books. Backbeat Books, and you can find Prince, Chaos, Disorder, and Revolution in bookstores everywhere, as well as backbeatbooks.com, amazon.com, and wherever books are sold. Jason, we were talking about Purple Rain, the album. I want to ask a couple of questions about Purple Rain, the movie. Tell our listeners the story of how the concept for Purple Rain, the movie, first came about.
Well, Prince had been wanting to do something for a long, old time in film anyway. You know, by that point, he'd mastered albums. He'd mastered recording records. He says himself, you know, he worked out how to write hit singles by a second album. And then when Prince went out on the 1999 tour, it's also known as the Triple Threat Tour, he'd been making notes in a notepad, and he was working on a project called The Second Coming, which is sort of going to be a mixture of staged action and live recordings and footage from the 1999 tour. And he kind of fell out with the producer of that, so that never happened. But Prince still kept plugging away at it. And at this point, the film was going to be called Dreams, and Prince had this purple notebook that he carried on tour. And he was basically writing a more than semi-autobiographical film about his coming up in Minneapolis. Of course, everyone knows the band The Time, and Morris Day and The Time are his great rivals in the film. And throughout the time in Minneapolis, you know, they were Flight Time for a while, and it was sort of local bands and things like that. And Prince more or less used the film to chart his rise, but also at the same time write himself into superstardom. And so the character that he assumed, known as the Kid, you know, made Prince the big star that he was on his way to becoming. Purple Rain pushed him over the edge.
But I understand that, I mean, okay, even though he sort of saw, you know, in his mind's eye, this would be a big success, from the standpoint of the record company and certainly from the standpoint of the film, of the film studio, it was a risky venture. Tell our listeners why it was such a risk.
Well, I mean, partly in the early to mid-80s, I mean, you've got a black R&B and soul star who is writing it, saying he's going to write his own film, he's going to write all the music, and he's going to star as the main guy in it. And that was absolutely unprecedented. Mm-hmm. Nobody had heard of that before. And also, although Purple Rain, as we say, made Prince the megastar that he became, he wasn't that megastar at the time. So it was kind of like, well, you know, he's critically successful, but his albums aren't selling bucket loads. And actually, Mo Austin, one of the execs over at Warner, had to put up $7 million of his own money when they finally convinced him to do it. It was such a risk, but it totally paid off. I mean, Prince became the first artist since the Beatles in 1964, because did it with A Hard Day's Night, and Prince became the first artist since then to have the number one single with When Doves Cry, an album and film top spots, and obviously the album and film being the Purple Rain album and film, and he, you know, it totally, totally paid off.
Now, in the book, Jason, you say that on the one hand, Purple Rain, the movie, is easily dated, but on the other hand, you also point out how Purple Rain, the movie, gives viewers a pretty good picture of Prince's psyche. Tell our listeners what you mean by that.
Well, I mean, when it comes to Purple Rain being dated, I mean, it's kind of weird. Some of the fashions are coming round again a bit.
Yeah.
There are kind of tropes of these 80s films you kind of watch, and they're all kind of cliches and things like that. And, you know, the one that always stick to my mind is that Morris Day gets accosted in the street by a sort of loudmouth ex-girlfriend, and they stick her in a dumpster. And that was kind of, I think Prince said, yeah, for the sake of humor, we may have gone overboard. You kind of wouldn't really get away with doing that sort of thing in a serious film these days. But Prince also using it to explore his own psyche and also kind of create his own myth as well. So you have things like in the film, the Kid's parents you know, his father is black and his mother is white, when in real life Prince's parents were both black. But he kind of, he was quite light-skinned himself, and he was playing on all this thing, and kind of there's a lyric in one of the songs off the album, which is, you know, I'm not a woman, I'm not a man, I'm something you'll never understand. And he was kind of using the film to muddy all those waters at the same time as sort of really creating his own myth.
I believe the original screenwriter of Purple Rain was William Blinn, who, you know, who are, her listeners know, he won an Emmy for Brian's Song as well as Roots, and he also created Starsky and Hutch. I understand he found Prince a little difficult to work with.
Yeah, I mean, everyone kind of finds Prince a little bit difficult to work with. He's got such his own vision on how he wants to go about things, and I also think he felt the weight of really having to prove himself with this one. So Prince was storming out of meetings, and you know, they go to the pictures, and Prince would sit there for about 20 minutes and leave and things like that. And you kind of get the feeling that this is, you know, he was very young at the time. You know, when they were making Purple Rain, he was 24, and I don't know many 24-year-olds who are completely together, really. You feel that you are at the time, but he was very, very young, and probably trying to assert his own sort of, his own presence on a project that probably for the first time in his career, he didn't really have complete control of because of the motion picture side of things.
Yeah, that kind of stems with one of my next questions, Jason. You mentioned both earlier in our conversation as well as in Prince, Chaos, Disorder, and Revolution, how Prince always had a fascination with film. Yet to me, it's no surprise that he made more of a mark in videos and concert films as opposed to scripted movies, because the essence of most movies is that they're scripted, and it's very difficult to pinpoint Prince in any number of words.
Yeah, his relationship with film has been sort of slightly less successful than perhaps he wanted it to be. I mean, the follow-up to Purple Rain was Under the Cherry Moon, which was a kind of real commercial and critical. And kind of, you know, I mean, I'm a big Prince fan myself,
yeah.
And I watched the film, and in Under the Cherry Moon specifically, there are things in it that I kind of smile at and I kind of like, and I think, yeah, that's kind of cute, and a lot of Prince fans do. But if you take that out of the equation, who really needs a black and white film with Prince pretending that he's, you know, in Art Deco era, and he dies at the end? And it's kind of, it's incredibly histrionic and overwrought, and really quite difficult to sit through unless you particularly like the man. And then we get started on Graffiti Bridge.
Well, it's kind of telling, you know, just the difference between Purple Rain and Under the Cherry Moon. Purple Rain was, you know, opened with this huge, you know, media blitz in Hollywood, the entertainment capital of the world. Under the Cherry Moon opened in a rather obscure town in Wyoming. What was the story behind that?
Well, you know a film's in trouble when you're looking at really sort of gimmicky promotional ways to sort of, you know, promotional gimmicks to get out into the public eye. And what they did to that one was a radio station had a sort of, you know, a lucky caller. Is it a radio station, MTV? I slightly forget now, but, you know, something ridiculous like the 1,000th caller,
yeah,
gets to have the premiere of the film in their hometown. And, of course, yeah, you say this obscure town in Wyoming where one of the locals has said, you know, we're no more for our fishing lures. We don't care about no sissy strutting around in women's clothes. The local response to this. And Prince was, of course, the date of this gal. And you can just imagine it. You can imagine the sort of hushed response that, you know, that greets the film. And then the band had to play a gig afterwards in the local Holiday Inn. It was the only place large enough to even accommodate anything like a concert.
Well, it goes back to that, you know, the sort of symbiotic relationship between Prince and MTV. You know, in many respects, earlier in the 80s, Prince helped put MTV on the map. And then later on, around the time of Under the Cherry Moon, MTV kind of helped Prince, which is with that movie, which is a movie that needed all the help it could get.
Yeah.
We're talking to Jason Draper, reviews editor of Record Collector Magazine and the author of Prince, Chaos, Disorder, and Revolution. Prince, Chaos, Disorder, and Revolution, an authoritative chronicle of the life and career of Prince. You can order Prince, Chaos, Disorder, and Revolution by going to backbeatbooks.com, amazon.com, and wherever books are sold, both online and in bookstores. Jason, we would be remiss if we did not ask the question, what led Prince to change his name to an unpronounceable symbol?
Well, at the time, Prince said it was a spiritual decision and his spirit moved him to do it. And he is and always was a very spiritual man in many respects. So I don't doubt that he believed that, certainly at least to some extent. But also he was in this ridiculous, hugely escalating battle with Warner Brothers that fast became ridiculous. Where, you know, Prince wanted to release an album every year and he was kept throwing new stuff at them and they wanted to take a break. Because by this point, you know, by the early 90s, it sounds a sort of slightly diminishing returns a little bit. That Diamonds and Pearls was a great success, but mm-hmm. his follow-up, which named after the symbol that he soon took as his own name, was nowhere near the success of Diamonds and mm-hmm. Pearls. And Warner Brothers had been hankering to release a best of for ages, and Prince kept mixing it and insisting they put out their new album. And in the end, I kind of think that there was, it's funny, we talk about Prince being savvy earlier.
Yeah.
This is one of his sort of absolute masterstroke in some respects, to change his name to this symbol, this sort of the androgyny symbol, or the love symbol as it's known. But I kind of feel that there was something slightly naive in that he figured that Warner Brothers had signed Prince. Mm-hmm. They hadn't signed Symbol. And so he felt that if he changed his name to the Symbol, he would be able to release whatever he wanted, when he wanted, off of his own back without Warner Brothers. And of course, that wasn't quite the way it played out, and it all became very acrimonious. And in the end, Prince is demanding that they release a Prince album at the same time as they release a Symbol album, and which, you know, see which ones the fans want and which is more successful in the charts. And in the end, they just had to part ways, and it all got incredibly embarrassing when Prince started making public appearances with the word "slave" scrawled on his face, and he started saying things like relating his battle with Warner Brothers to African-American slavery. And the problem is that Prince had slightly wrongly trumpeted his $100 million deal with Warner's that he signed earlier in the decade, and it didn't really work out that way, and it never would have, but Prince did the maths, and Prince decided that everyone should know that it's this $100 million deal which makes him more expensive than Madonna, more expensive than Michael Jackson. So when a few years later he is saying he's changing his name because Malcolm X changed his surname, Prince's real surname is Nelson, mm-hmm. and he would go on TV saying, "But I don't know who Nell is, etc." And so just after a couple of years, after saying he's now worth $100 million, to be able to say, you know, this is the situation and it's just like black slavery, that was when it started to go a little bit awry. And what he really did was fight for artist rights and completely revolutionized the business. And that's the absolute positive that came out of it. And you now have big bands now like Radiohead breaking from their major labels and selling their music direct to fans and doing everything on their terms. And this is the sort of thing that Prince started. But it became a bit of a PR hash, and a lot of the silliness surrounding it, A, made it very easy to ridicule Prince, and B, made it very difficult at the time to really see the points that he was making. And it's kind of only as time has passed that people realise that, yeah, Prince actually really, out of all of that, when the dust has settled, Prince actually really changed the business for the future, you know, forever.
Well, he certainly did, and he not only changed the business, he was one of the first musical artists to... In the early 2000s, when Napster came along and sort of changed the way, you know, music is sold and distributed, you know, Prince, I mean, most artists and certainly most record companies got their backs up against the wall and fought it. Prince was one of the first artists to embrace it.
Absolutely, and I mean, even before Napster, in 1997, he started taking, after his break with Warner Brothers, he took pre-orders for an album of outtakes called Crystal Ball, and he was savvy enough to take the pre-orders to make sure that he had enough orders to make pressing it up viable. Now, in 1998, he started shipping it out after a number of delays, but that actually makes him the first artist ever to release an entire album through the internet. Mm-hmm. This was all done online. All the pre-orders would go to his website, and you order this record. Now, 10 years later, to go back to Radiohead, they were doing it in 2007 within Rainbows, and they were pressing up the In Rainbows disc box, and they took a load of pre-orders first for that. Now, that's a 10-year gap, and when Radiohead did it, it was hailed as this great, amazing move. When Prince did it, he was so far ahead of his time in the mid-90s that people were just still trying to get their head around the internet at all, let alone start selling things through it. And then with Napster, when you have Metallica suing Napster for sharing their music, Prince actually gave Napster his latest single in 2001 and realized that that was the way to get his music to his fans.
Yeah.
Of course, this begat the NPG Music Club, and he started his own download store, and fans could log on and download his music directly from him. And it earned him a Webby Award, Lifetime Achievement Award, in the mid-noughties. And then, of course, after that, Prince took himself off the internet.
Well, you mentioned Prince was ahead of his time in so many ways. He famously declared in 2010 that the internet is dead. Is he seeing something that nobody else is seeing, or is he saying that just for effect?
I think saying it for effect. I mean, it's kind of a weird thing to say. He said that when, certainly in the UK, his album at the time, 2010, was being, and second time he did it over here, giving it away through a newspaper. This time it was the Mirror. And, you know, newspapers are a dying sort of art form at the moment, unfortunately. Mm-hmm. I work in the print media myself,
yeah.
So it's kind of a strange time for print journalism. And so for Prince to sort of be giving away a free record in a newspaper that is clearly dying out, and to say, well, actually, the internet is dead, but it's the internet that's killing off the newspaper that you're keeping this record through. It's all kind of a weird old situation, and I think it really is just classic Prince controversy, and he's always got something to say, and even more recently, he's going on tour doing his Welcome to America shows in the States, and he's on George Lopez saying people shouldn't cover his songs. And, you know, Prince has always got a great controversy up his sleeve, and all he needs to do is turn up and say it. And you know, it goes around the world immediately, especially, ironically, with the internet. Who would have known of that statement in some tiny paper? Well, it's not tiny in the UK, but to the US listeners, this newspaper would be tiny.
Yeah.
But Prince said it, and it went out on the internet. And then everyone knew within minutes, you know?
Final question, Jason. What would you like readers to come away with after they read Prince, Chaos, Disorder, and Revolution?
Well, I think the main thing is that, you know, interestingly, we talk so much about him changing his name to The Symbol, because that's one of the big things that have, it's made it quite easy to ridicule Prince. It's made him a figure of fun. You could tell a lot of jokes about him, certainly at the time. And I think that has really confused people over time. You know, people now is kind of, do we still call him Prince? Literally, a UK DJ was on the radio the other day. I was listening to him at work, and he's saying he mentioned Prince and didn't know if you went back to calling him Prince or not anymore. And he's become a Jehovah's Witness in recent times. There's a lot of strange and confusing things. And I think that it's been very easy to ridicule him, very easy to sort of gossip about him. A lot of people have got stories to tell that are kind of non-stories, really. And so I felt that the guy really hadn't got his due. Yes, we know about his great 80s innovations with music, and we know about the Purple Rain success, but things like the internet transformation, the artist rights transformation, and completely just revolutionizing the business in the 90s, that's really the second half of his career, is all about business rather than musical revolution. Sorry, I'll say that again. It's more about business rather than musical revolution.
Sure.
And I think what I want the book to do is really tell the story and tell it properly. And it's, I say myself in my introduction, it's not a gossip story. It's not set out to get anyone's back up. And, you know, of course, his girlfriend's a part of his life, but they're not the be-all and end-all. You know, there's such a complex, complicated story out there. And I kind of wanted to just really give him his due. And I don't think that, you know, how many books are there on Bob Dylan? How many books are there on the Beatles? And there are far fewer books on Prince. And I don't understand why, when he has been for his generation as monumentally defining. And I just really felt that it was time that he got his due for these sort of things.
Well, you certainly give him his due and then some, Jason, in your book, Prince, Chaos, Disorder, and Revolution. Prince, Chaos, Disorder, and Revolution, an authoritative chronicle of the life and career of musical artist and musical maverick Prince. The publisher of Prince, Chaos, Disorder, and Revolution is Backbeat Books. Backbeat Books. And you can find Prince, Chaos, Disorder, and Revolution in bookstores everywhere, as well as backbeatbooks.com, amazon.com, and wherever books are sold online. Jason, excellent book, fascinating conversation. Best of luck with you in the book. Let's talk again one of these nights on TV Confidential.
Thank you very much. I really appreciate you having me. Thank you very much, Ed.
That'll do it for our first hour, folks, but stay with us. There is more TV Confidential to come. Michelle Danner will join us when we come back. Michelle is the artistic director of the Edgemar Center of the Arts in Santa Monica, as well as one of the most successful acting coaches in Hollywood. Michelle also recently directed the film version of John Buffalo Mailer's Hello, Herman, an unflinching examination of today's society through the eyes of a teenager who carries out a Columbine-like shooting. It is an interesting film that we think you'll want to know about, and we'll talk about that with Michelle. We'll also have a brand new edition of This Week in TV History, all coming up in hour number two of TV Confidential.
If you haven't been listening to TV Confidential, this is who you're missing.
Jack Klugman.
Lee Merriweather.
William Shaller.
Lee Majors.
Dan Frischman.
Sally Kellerman.
Bernie Casey.
Kathy Garver. Kim Davi.
Richard Anderson.
Susan Olson.
Tom Dreesen.
And many, many more of your favorite celebrities and people behind the scenes in the world of television. That's TV Confidential. Every week on this station and every day online at tvconfidential.net.